last six or seven months we've been gathering here, really just focused on one thing, which is to provide support, encouragement, nurturance, good ideas, and help whatever ways we can with our medical student colleagues. You are on quite a journey that has incredible demands and asks great sacrifice. And we know sometimes for minority students, those demands and sacrifices are all the greater, often with lack of sufficient support. A warm hand at your back, our goal tonight is to be that set of warm hands, those many sets of warm hands, and to really hopefully have a lively conversation tonight. The topic we're going to be dealing with is that daunting, often, residency interview. I know at our program at White Memorial in Los Angeles, I had my first interview yesterday. We are just diving headlong into this very important season where residencies are making our best decisions, and students are really also interviewing us and trying to figure out what is the place that you most would like to continue your training in this important journey. It sounds like most everybody is pretty comfortable already in this avatar world. We are grateful to Boston University School of Medicine that gives us this space to use. We're really grateful to Robin and Neil who really guide us and make all of this work for us, and certainly to Pam, who is our local wizard guru, without whom these gatherings would be impossible. Just one thing what I would like to invite you to do is if you move we're going to sort of invite friendships amongst each other. So if you just move your icon over the name of somebody, you'll see a little green eye appears. If you double click on that, then you will you'll have an opportunity to add a friend. A little menu will come up and it says add a friend. So why don't you do that right now? Why don't you just sort of look around and find some people that you don't know very well, double click on their name and add them as a friend. It's a nice way to sort of build our connections. We'll also be able to find each other if we're ever all in Second Life again at some point.
You know, I had the window show up that with the invitation, and I was about to click accept, and it disappeared.
Yeah, you sometimes have to do it a couple times. They flash sometimes quickly. Your fingers will get a little faster with this with practice. So.
And Jeff, remember that when it disappears, there's a gray box in the upper right-hand corner with the number, and that if you click on that gray box with the number, the offer will reappear.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. All right. So I'm going to now turn it over to our presenters. During the presentation, feel free to sort of text your comments and your ideas in the chat box, and we'll certainly have time for plenty of conversation and discussion when we're done. So I turn it over to both of you. Good evening, and thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. This is quite an experience for me, as Pam has had a chance to kind of coach me through some of this technology. So happy to be here tonight.
As am I. Again, it's also an interesting experience, one that I've not had before, but I'm looking forward to it.
Before we get started, I think I just wanted to get a sense of how many, M1 year everyone here is in. Do we? Like M4s, M3s, M1s, 2s? Is that something that...
Sure, people can just
type stuff
text
in.
Those
okay,
in. Yeah.
So looks like a couple of M4s, 2s. Okay, good. Fifth pathway, okay, M4, good. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Excellent. All right, so it looks like we have all M4s and a fifth pathway. Excellent. Okay, great. So very relevant topic for everyone here then. Pam, is it okay if I think I feel comfortable just facing the group, and if you don't mind advancing for us?
Okay. Okay, it's been advanced.
Harry, this is the one about the match process, and I think you had sent me some notes. Do you want to say something about, you know, what they should be preparing for? Some of them probably have already started the process of interviewing, so.
Sure. I guess the most important thing that to consider as far as the match process is this is not the same as applying to medical school. I know most people applying to medical school are happy to get in wherever they get in. And whereas this is called a match process for a good reason. Hopefully what you'll do is you'll find a program that matches your interests and your lifestyle to some extent, because you're going to be working with those people for the next 3 years. You're going to be learning from them. You're going to be depending upon them, and they're going to be depending upon you. And most people end up doing, after the residency, settling within 100 miles of wherever they do the residency program. So you want to carefully pick a place that you think you're going to be comfortable with and a group of people that you're going to be comfortable with. And they're going to be looking to do the same thing.
The other thing that I wanted to say as well is, as most of you know, the interview process starts way back in August. You probably all have gone through it in terms of the registration. It usually goes from August through December, and the interviews start around, for most programs, the interviewing season starts in October, and it goes all the way through. Most program directors want to be done with interviews by middle of January, so you probably should not try schedule or thinking about scheduling interviews too far beyond that. I actually spoke to a student just recently who told me that for some programs, he was trying to schedule interviews later in the year, and some programs were already booked throughout their season. So students were advised, usually I believe that students are advised to get everything out by September 15th. And so as soon as the programs get their applications, a lot of times, you know, they are invited to interview. And so students are booking their interviews as soon as they get the acceptance for the interview. And so that's one of the things, if you still, there are programs that you feel strongly about interviewing with and have not set up those interviews, I would strongly encourage you to do that before those interviewing slots get all filled up. Anything else, or should we save questions for last, or if anyone has any questions now?
I think we'll, you can just sort of go on with your conversation, and we'll do questions and answers in the end. At the same time, people may pitch you some through the chat box, so you may want to keep an eye on that just in case anything comes up.
Okay. So we can go ahead and go to our next slide, which is the review of the programs. So for this one, there are different specialty programs have different priorities. So I don't know what, and you may want to just put in the chat what specialty people are applying for, but some of the things that you may be looking for, programs may be looking for, are things like leadership, okay, family medicine. Okay, so I see family peds. Okay, good. So leadership, some programs are more interested in community involvement. Some programs can be very highly research-oriented. Others may have clinical, are more interested in your clinical abilities. So as you research the programs that you're applying to, pay attention to the kinds of things that these programs are a focus on, so that you know also what you, what is it that interests you, so that you, so that you would be compatible with those programs that you are applying for in terms of what those programs look like. Harriet, anything you may want to add in that area of having a good match with the program and the applicant?
Yes. People ask about university-based programs versus community-based programs, and that'll give you a rough idea of the orientation of the programs, but that's not everything involved in the program. So you have some community programs that have strong academic and research interests, and some university programs like ours that are very community and community oriented and community based.
And the other thing to remember as well, when you go into the interviewing process, is that you should review your own application as well, so that the programs will be asking you any questions about your personal statement, about any research that you might have done, volunteer activities, things like that. So anything is gained. So just like you want to research the program that you're interviewing and know the program well, you also want to remember to just review your own application and the information you sent to those programs, so that when they ask you anything in your own file that's in your files, that you can also answer and not something, and they won't be asking a question to something that you may have forgotten to, that you put on your application. So Pam, there, someone's asking if there's any way to get the slides closer. I think that's probably, they have to do their own, right? They have to try to get the slides closer themselves.
To make the slides, I've got an echo. To get the slides closer, take a look at the sign that's over here on the left. If you hold down your Option or Alt key, your cursor turns into a rectangular magnifying glass, and you can use that along with your mouse to change your viewpoint so that you can zoom in or zoom out or actually spin around and look at your own face. But you probably want to just make the move in a little bit to make the slides closer without actually moving your person. You can also do that through the camera controls in the horizontal bar at the bottom. The second option allows you to zoom in.
We mostly have pictures, so we don't have a lot of text. So we just have prompts because we wanted to make it more of a conversational discussion. So it's mostly the prompts for us to know the topics we wanted to discuss and the points that we wanted to bring to you. So Pam, I think we can go to the next slide.
Okay.
So the next slide on plan your trip well. For some of the, your interviews may be in town and you may not have to travel very far. For others, you may have to take a plane or a train ride or, you know, some other mode of transportation. So you want to plan your trip accordingly. So you may want to ask the program that you're visiting if they have any way to accommodate you for staying overnight. Some programs do. Others, for others, you have to find your own accommodation. And the one thing that that we recommend, especially if you're flying from out of town, is that you schedule your interview wisely. So try to schedule your interview around the time when where you'll be able to attend grand rounds or teaching conferences, so that you'll get a chance to speak not just with the interviewers, but also with residents and maybe students, and be able to see a little bit more of the program. And if you have the opportunity to stay an extra day and perhaps visit the clinic or visit other parts of the program, historically applicants find report that this is a very valuable information, that they're able to gather valuable information from when they use this sort of format to get to know the programs a little bit better. Anything, Harry, that you would want to add on this?
Sure. Part of that preparation is finding out as much as possible about the program. So you do the normal stuff of looking online, but you also may contact somebody else you may know in that city. Again, if you get a chance either to come early or to stay late, you may get a chance to talk to other residents about what life is really like outside of the formal interview process, and also get a feel, especially if you're traveling, what's that city like, and is that someplace you really want to live, and which, believe it or not, sooner or later in residency, you will get some time, and you want to make sure that's someplace that you want to spend 3 years.
So in terms of preparing for your trip, that's the residency at the aspect or the program aspect, but you don't want to neglect other aspects that are also important, which are your appearance and the way that you are going to portray yourself. So we recommend, in general, when you look up the literature on how to dress, the recommendation is that you wear, for both men and women, that you wear a suit with conservative clothing, such as, you know, neutral colors, blues, grays, things like that. And also, you know, limit the jewelry. For women, not too much makeup. You know, just be yourself you know, try to just be professional and courteous, and try to find out as much about the program and whether you feel comfortable and whether you feel that it's a good fit for you as you're visiting the various places. The other thing that you probably have heard is that, in general, you should not choose the program that you're most interested in should probably not be your first interview. So that if you have a total of 10 programs that you apply to, you probably should squeeze it somewhere in the middle, with the idea that the first couple of interviews will be sort of like a practice where you may be quite nervous, not knowing what to expect. And so it'll be sort of like a rehearsal for the first couple of interviews. And then you want to squeeze the ones in the middle that you're most interested in. You know, towards the end, a lot of the times applicants start getting kind of tired, and sometimes programs as well. And the best thing to do is interview in the middle of the season for those programs that you're most interested in.
Some people will also work with their local department and practice, especially with some of the residents that you become familiar with. Practice that interview before you go out on the road doing the interview.
True, that's a good point. All right, Pam, maybe you can advance us to our next slide, which is first impressions. So for this slide, We just wanted, it's a prompt for us to just remind you that first impressions,
yes,
for us about the applicants, as well as first impression of you about the programs, are very important. So, you know, be on time. Try to get to know names of people that will be interviewing you ahead of time if you can. Make sure that you spell names correctly. When sitting down for the interview, you want to let everyone sit down first. And you want to treat everyone, you know, not courteously. There's a lot of times that we have, when we do our super match, which is when we do our rank order, that everyone in our program gives feedback. So not only do the faculty and the residents that interview, but also our front staff, our coordinators, our staff people. And so every now and then, if our staff feels that they were treated rudely by any applicant, there's been times that we actually don't rank applicants if we feel that they were just out of line with the frontline staff. So make sure that you're, you know, nice across the board. And just because someone may be a secretary or, you know, not one of the faculty members, that doesn't mean that, you know, you don't want to treat them all with respect. So that's something that I would emphasize very strongly.
I agree. All of our staff that are involved in the interview process, so the residency coordinator, the residency assistant, the front desk people, all get input as to the students that we're putting on our match list. So we do a similar process.
And just like our picture shows, you want to be nicely trimmed. You want to be, you know, clean, shaved, have a nice warm smile. Portray confidence. We talked about the dress. Always give a firm handshake. And you always want to be conscious of your body posture. All right. If we can advance to... the title of our next slide is during the interview. So what to do during the interview. So what we say, the first line says, direct each question to appropriate interviewers. What we mean by that is you probably don't want to ask the program director, you know, how many times they serve, you know, how many meals are you going to have, or where, you know, where the call room is, so that you want to have your set of questions, but direct those appropriately. So program-related questions can most likely, most appropriately be asked to the program director. Things about call or, you know, how rough the calls are, or the meals or vacation, things like that. If you ask those questions, you may want to, you know, those may be questions that may be more appropriate for the residents, more so like lifestyle types of questions. And then you also want to ask at the appropriate time. So just make sure that your interviews flow well, that you're conscious about what you're, you know, they're asking you, that you're asking the questions appropriately, that you're asking them thoroughly, that you know what they're asking you. Always be aware of inappropriate questions. We'll go over that in a little bit in a couple of slides later. And then you always want to be aware of the importance of choice word, that your word choice of words. So I put an example here. If you wanted to, for example, ask about the weakness of a program, you know, you don't want to say something like, "What is wrong with? Can you tell me what's wrong with your program?" You can say something like, "What are some of the challenges that I might face in your program," for example. Or you can also say, "What would you consider one of the weaknesses?" But you want to make sure that you don't word your question, especially if it's something that you want to inquire about the program in terms of weaknesses, in a sort of a you know, too confrontational of a form. So, Harry, if you wanted anything to add on at this point.
Sure. The other thing is to prepare what your answers are going to be. So, again, sometimes they'll ask you, what do you think your strengths and weaknesses are? So make sure you know what you want to answer there. They may ask you, what do you think you're going to do when you get finished with residency? So they won't hold you to that necessarily, but you should have an idea that you're interested in one thing or you're interested in this kind of practice, but you don't have enough experience to decide on it yet. But at least that you've thought about the future past residency.
There was a comment I wanted to make, but I can't remember what it was. Anyway, the other thing that I also remember post-interview, you always want to make sure that you send thank you notes to the appropriate people that that you may want to thank for the interview, especially, you know, program directors, faculty, residents, and particularly for those programs that you are interested in. When we do our super match, sometimes we look at how many notes, thank you notes, were sent by applicants, and not that it's necessarily, it may not always correlate, but if we see that someone made the effort to, you know, thank everyone, you know, that just shows more of an effort from that applicant to that they're being mindful of thanking everyone that they ran into. So, we can go to the next slide, I think.
The other thing that sometimes, while we're going to the next slide, is sometimes touching base closer to when they're going to put together their match list to remind people, particularly if that's your first or second choice and you interviewed in late November or early December, just checking back with the program is helpful for them to remember who you were if you were one of those first interviews.
That's a good point. I think that it also helps if you are interested in a program and you want to go for a second look. I think it's best to do it as close to the interview to the time that you interviewed, so that you're still fresh in everybody's minds. If you're able to schedule something when you're still visiting or within a week or two, that's probably the best time to do it. I think the comment that I wanted to make to follow up on someone who wrote a comment in the chat box was about maintaining your stamina and through the interview as well as through the interview season. And I just wanted to emphasize that because I think there are times when we're interviewing candidates and you know, especially towards the middle or end of the season, you can tell their applicants start also getting a little bit tired or maybe, you know, not as interested, or they feel that they've already done several interviews and maybe they're not as interested in, you know, in our program, or maybe it's just their personality, but you definitely want to become aware of, make sure that you're not appearing tired or disinterested or, you know, like you don't have stamina anymore. I think if you are just not interested in a program and it's towards the end of the season and you're just doing it for more practice or just for, you know, just to make sure that you cover all your bases, I would say just consider, you know, just not, you know, canceling your interview. I would do that as opposed to just showing up and not showing any interest. But I would definitely cancel the interview. I think that I've seen and the program directors network when when we go back and forth and directors making comments, that sometimes that when applicants just don't show up, they could be known in locally. And so just because, you know, program directors are always going to meetings and they're always running into each other. And so they may even remember someone by name and say, so-and-so, you know, never showed up. And another director may say, oh, that's interesting. That person didn't show up to others and they didn't cancel our interview either. So you kind of, people get to know you out there as someone who's just impolite and doesn't cancel their interviews and just don't show up. So be very careful. If you decide not to show up to an interview, make sure that you call and cancel as opposed to just not showing up.
I agree, because residency directors definitely talk to each other, especially local ones.
All right. You can go to the next one. Good ask. Oh, commonly asked questions. Pam, commonly asked questions. I think Harry already alluded to some of these, some of the questions that you may, and you may have already had a few interviews. They will ask you, of course, why you are choosing the, one of the most commonly asked questions, why you are choosing the specialty you are choosing, and why are you choosing their program? They want to know why they want to feel special. So they're going to ask you, what is it that brought you to them on that day, and why you chose a specialty, like I said. You will also be asked about your goals, like it was alluded to earlier, probably in just about every interview. And the question that you will very commonly get asked, and it seems like from the applicant's perspective, is one of the uncomfortable, it's an uncomfortable question because it's like an open-ended question, but it's the question of, tell me about yourself. And it leaves it is a very open sort of question, and you may not know exactly what they're looking for, but just make sure that you have an answer to that question. They will ask you about your strengths and your weaknesses. Of course, you've already heard that your weaknesses, you always want to turn them into positives. So you can say, I'm a workaholic and I like working very hard. You know, if you work long hours or, you know, something like that, but, you know, I just like working hard, or I'm trying to work less, or, you know, as an example. But you always want to, whatever it is that you identify as your weakness, you always want to somehow turn it into a positive, so it doesn't sound like it's a weakness that programs may not want to deal with. Any other questions? Commonly asked questions?
Yeah, I think you've covered most of them. Again, what you think you want to do, why you think you want to do that, you know, whether it's a group practice, solo practice, rural or urban, they won't hold you to that. But at least you need to have appeared to have thought it through. And I agree with that. Everybody wants to know why you chose to interview them with them. So you should have that pretty well down.
Other questions that probably will come up quite often are your 5-year plan, your 10-year plan, whether you plan on doing any fellowships within that specialty. Whether you're interested in academic medicine versus research versus community versus private versus, you know, people want to have some kind of idea of what your long-term goals are. It may not hold you to it 100%, but, you know, in general, people want to have some idea of what the applicants are interested in for the long run as well. All right, we can go to the next one, which is create your list of questions.
No.
Someone's asking about what can you say if a program that you're interested in due to a look does not have the fellowship of your interest? I'm not sure what the question is, but if you're going to a residency program, they don't necessarily want you to go to their residency so that you can go to their fellowship. They just want to know what is it that you're interested for the future. So, you know, like if someone that is applying in my program, they say, well, I'm interested in sports medicine. I may want to know that because then that way I know how to gear some of their electives towards their training so that when they apply for fellowships after post-residency, then they're best prepared to do that. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to rank a whole bunch of people that want to go into sports medicine or, for example, or, but it's not, it's the reason that a lot of times they ask you the question of a fellowship interest is not so that they can offer it to you in their own institution. I hope that it answers the question. So
I think
you also,
one,
go ahead.
I think one of the things that people, especially if you have a lot of interviews, find helpful is to, right after the interview, is to record some of your impression of that program. Because once you've interviewed for four or five programs, remembering details and how you felt about a particular program can get confusing. So soon after, like that night after you finish or you're on your way to the next interview, write down what you thought of the program and what the answers were to some of those questions you asked.
That's a good point. And I just wanted to reiterate about somebody writing some of the questions that they ask about the applicants, about how they take care of themselves and how they deal with stress. That's also a good question that we like to ask, especially if we see that, you know, if applicants have written about something, you know, adverse happening, or maybe they have to take a year off, or illness in the family or death in the family, things like that, that we want to know how they dealt with adversity. And so that question may come up in terms of how do you take care of yourself or how do you deal with stress? Because, you know, every residency is very stressful and they're going to be dealing with stressful situations. So we want to get a sense of how, at least how people perceive themselves dealing with stressful situations. And having your own list of questions, I think, is very important. Just as it was mentioned earlier, you want to have your list of what's most important to you and be able to compare different programs and jotting down notes, hopefully soon after you do your interview, because after, you know, several interviews, you won't remember one from the next. But, you know, location can be important. The difference between a university versus a community hospital, what types of fellowships may be offered there, but not necessarily, you know, that may not be one that may be too strong on your list. So we can probably address some of these during the question and answer session, but definitely be prepared with your list of questions to address. You also, if you research the literature on medical residency interviews, they also suggest what's called a top five plan, which is what are the five things that you may want a program to know about you? So if you go in with a plan and say, this is what I want to, how I want to portray myself, and these are the five things that I definitely want to get across about myself, then you have those in mind. And at some point in the interview that you tell the program about them, that's also important, because those are the things that are important to you, that people, that programs know about you. So just having a goal about that also is helpful. All right, we can go to the next slide, please. And it's questions not to ask. So these are what are recommended that, in general, that you don't ask directly. things, for example, about salaries, benefits, vacation, competition, or parental leave arrangements. Especially not as you begin your interview. These questions, for the most part, if you research a program, will be found in the, either on their website or in a brochure that may be provided to you on interview day. Or these could also be questions that could be asked to the residents, especially if you stay an extra day and follow people around and feel a little more comfortable with people. So, but for the most part, these are probably not questions that you may want to ask during your formal interviews.
I agree.
Okay. And just as there's always this list of questions you probably should not ask, there's also a list of questions we should not ask as programs of the applicants. And this is the next, we can go to the next question, the next slide, please, Pam. And it's, I put it in quotes, illegal questions, but when we prepare for interview season, we do refer them to actually illegal questions because we're not supposed to ask these questions. And applicants can potentially come back and either report or somehow complain about this. So things that you, that we as programs should not be asking of you are things about family plans. So especially for women, we cannot ask, well, are you planning on getting pregnant during your residency? Or we should not be asking necessarily your marital status. You may volunteer those things, but we are not allowed to directly ask you whether you expect to have children during residency, your age, and we're not supposed to ask you directly that if you're offered a position today, will you accept it? So those are questions that we, just so that you know, should not be asking of you. And most programs know not to do that, but... And if you ask these questions, you also may choose not to answer them. But, you know, if you can sort of say it in a polite manner, but you are not required to. If you feel uncomfortable answering them, you may not, don't necessarily have to answer them. All right. So I think we have one more slide, Pam. And the last one, we just... titled it Be Yourself and Know Yourself. So it's just, again, reiterating that you want to come in feeling confident, feeling comfortable, trying to get to know as much about the program, trying to see if the program is a good fit for you, whether, you know, that's the same thing that the programs are trying to find, whether you are a good fit for them. So... you know, go to your interviews, enjoy them, ask your questions, have them ask their questions, and just enjoy the process as stressful as it may be. Anything you have to add?
I think it's important to know yourself, as the slide said. Know what things that you're interested in, know what style you are. So if it's somebody that's relatively casual, you may not want to go to a program that's very formal. So knowing yourself and making an analysis of what the program is really like is important, because those are some of the things that are hard to see on a website. The atmosphere there, how people relate to other people, that's an important part of residency, but is not necessarily what somebody's going to put up on their website.
So I think that's all of the formal discussion that we had.
Well, Dr. Vasquez and Dr. Schmidt, it's shocking to me to think this was your first night in the Second Life. You seem like old pros, very comfortable.
Oh,
it's been, my avatar is so happy to hang with your avatars. This was such a rich and useful session, so full of very helpful, useful advice. I'd like to see if there are other questions or comments or any other feedback anyone has. I see there's a question.
I see a question about,
a couple coming. Yeah.
About rescheduling an interview for us in family medicine. Absolutely not. You just call the coordinator and, you know, say, you know, something came up personally or whatever it is. Is it possible that I can reschedule now? What you may run into, that if you're rescheduling and there may not be any other availabilities later on whenever you want them. So that's a risk that you may take by rescheduling, but otherwise it does not look bad. It's just a matter of whether may not be any other opportunities for interviews later on.
No, what looks bad is that you don't show up and then try to reschedule.
Yeah. Or don't show up and don't cancel, right? Just like we said before. I'm not sure what the question is about advice about the couple's match.
Can just hit speak and just speak to us if you have a couple's question.
Well, while we wait for that, the other question that I see up there now, is it too aggressive to contact the program that you apply to? No, sometimes it's just a matter of they haven't gotten to it yet. We get a lot of applications, and we may be delayed in responding to you. So if you're really interested, you don't want to call them every week, but you do want to say, I'm really interested in your program. And I'd like to schedule an interview and I'd like to make sure I can get it into my interviewing schedule.
Mm-hmm. I agree that for the most part, I would say that programs get a lot more applications than they have interviewing slots. So it may also be the fact that if you don't call and somehow your application doesn't get flagged in some way where you may say, oh, you know, will you be calling me? Or I was just calling to inquire about it. It may just flag that your application so that someone actually looks at it. And if you're an applicant that we would consider, we probably would grant you an interview. So I think that it's probably a good idea that if you don't hear, it's just that programs may be just too overwhelmed to handle with the volume. It also helps if you know someone in the program, right? So that they can help you out. If you either know faculty or residents and say, oh, you know, can you find out what's been going on with my application? So they can sort of get the insight, at least find out where in the process you are.
One of the questions that's typed up there is about stronger programs. I think part of the question really comes down to what are you trying to get out of the residency program? I mean, you can look at or ask about board pass rates. Most residency programs, almost all of their residents graduate and pass the boards. But what differs is the type of education you may get there. Not the style of education and some details about, again, community service versus research-oriented. So different residency programs will usually have different strengths. So it really depends upon what strength you're looking for and what matches up with what you're looking for.
For a lot of people, location is very, I would say for the majority of people, they choose a place based on location. So I think that's a good start. I just wanted to go back also to the couples match question, because I don't think we heard from whoever asked. But in general, I think you just, I think if anything, it probably limits you more as the applicant? I mean, because you're going to be looking at cities together, and so you may have liked, you know, a program in one city, and you know, the person you're, you know, doing couples match with liked a program somewhere else. So I think if anything is more of a compromise between you and the other person more than it affecting the programs themselves. But the way that we look at that, we say, well, they really wanted to stay in California, so we're probably not going to get this person because their significant other really wanted to stay in California. So we don't look at the couples match adversely, but a lot of the times we're able to kind of gauge whether we're going to get a good applicant or not based on where they were thinking about going location-wise. So I don't know if that answers a question or not.
Well, I think the other thing is that when we do our match list, we tend to rank people in the order of which we'd like to have them in the program. Because you don't know what the student's going to put down on your match list. If it's a strong candidate, even if you don't think you're going to get them, you go ahead and put them down because it doesn't hurt the program. So if in a couples match, your location was not their fit location, but you thought that the applicant was pretty good, you still rank them where you would rank them regardless, because you never know what happens with that couple. They may not get their favorite city, so you may still be a good choice for them.
The question about the last dates that applicants can expect to hear from programs, I think that just varies across the board. It probably depends on how long they interview, how many days a week they interview for, how many spots they have in the residency. So I would probably ask that question. You know, if you call a specific residency that you haven't heard from, you probably would want to ask that residency and say, you know, when is the latest that I should expect to hear from you? Because depends on how quickly they fill their interviewing spots.
And I also think it's okay to say, I'm arranging my travel, and so I need to figure out, if you're going to invite me for an interview, how do I fit it in among the other interviews that I have? And I want to be as efficient as possible with that, especially because travel is not cheap. So I don't think calling and asking about it is being a pest. If you call every week, then yeah, might be.
This is Jeff. I have a really pointed question, and just I'm going to put you on the spot, both of you and the rest of the participants as well. But let's say I failed step two twice, the first time because I had family issues, and the second time, frankly, I was just depressed. I'm going to be asked about those two step two failures. How can I best formulate a response that highlights somehow strength through this forest of challenge?
I think part of it is thinking about that question ahead of time and being able to say exactly what you said, is that, you know, we had a family crisis, and I was depressed after that. I realized that, and I got assistance with that depression and successfully passed step two eventually. And I think that the experience that I have will make me a better physician, because I will understand patient situations better than if I just read it in a book or somebody taught it on a PowerPoint. So there are ways to turn your life experience into something that you can use to become a great clinician.
I love your answer so much, and I actually want to recruit you for our program. I think that your answer showed such insight and honesty and truth-telling, and yet optimism, hopefulness. I think I really appreciate that. Sorry for interrupting, Dr. Vasquez, but thank you for that, Dr. Strother.
No, I just wanted to say that I agree with his comment. The programs want to know when you had something in your life, an adverse event or an adverse situation. What the programs want to know is what you did about it, how did you overcome that situation, and what did you learn from it? So that if you say, for example, if you come to our program and you run into a similar situation, we want to know that you are emotionally ready to deal with another situation if it ever arises. So I agree that turning something that happened to you to in a positive way, something that you're a stronger, that conveys that you're a stronger person because of what happened to you.
I think one of the questions I saw was questions that people would ask about if you went to a foreign medical school, and we will frequently ask more questions about your clinical experience than if you went to a U.S. medical school. So you should be prepared to talk about what your clinical experience is and to go into some detail about where you did your clinicals, with whom, and what did you learn from them.
I agree. I can give you an example. In the Chicagoland area, we get a lot of residents students from Ross that do their clinicals in the Chicagoland area. But there are some hospitals that we know do not expose the students to a lot of clinical work, or they do a lot of observerships as opposed to more hands-on. But then other programs within the city, we know that they're able to function as, you know, a U.S. medical student would. So we know even within the city, if there are two Ross students, we ask them specifically, where did you do your clinicals? Because we know that if they did their clinicals in hospital A and B, as opposed to hospital C or D, that those two Ross international students had totally different clinical experiences.
Any other really tough questions you want to pitch? Any situations you want to get some feedback on? This is a really great time to pick the brains of our experts. Although you've been doing a lot of that, I'm not sure what else you're curious about. Looks like someone's typing, a couple people, maybe some questions coming through. Okay, so Rachel has a question. How can you be an asset to this program? What is a way to answer this question without sounding like any other applicant?
That's a little bit difficult. I think everybody's an individual, and you try to bring up what you individually have to bring. So it may be part of your background that you had some experience either before medical school or after medical school. So a lot of people have had life experiences that they can bring to the clinical setting. Some people have previous work experiences that they can use to enlighten the residency program about things in the general community that the resident doesn't have expertise in. But that's a good question. That's something that you have to kind of look at yourself and try to figure out what's unique about you or your life experience.
But it's a question you definitely should be ready to potentially answer, because it's probably a very commonly asked question.
And I think that it's actually a really great question, because it gives you the chance to pitch, you know, again, this, what's on the screen right now, love yourself, right? What you might bring to a program can be any number of things. Maybe you're a nurturer. Maybe you're especially good at communication. Maybe you're good with kids and families. Maybe you're good at research and online data collection and medical knowledge. Maybe you're good at organizational skills. Maybe you're good at social and well-being. Maybe you're good at patience and coping because you've been through life personal challenges. I've had applicants that have said, stress? I'm not so worried about stress. I came from Vietnam. I was on the boat. We were trying to survive. I found that a very compelling and powerful story. This was a person who had already been through horrors in their life and had really sort of survived and thrived. I found that very compelling. Looks like there's a question about step one wasn't great, but step two was fine. Should they worry about explaining step one? What do you think?
I think I worry less about step one if you had a good step two score.
I agree. We look more at the number of failures as opposed to pass-fail.
I want to say a word about this that's been on my mind. Maybe you have some thoughts too. You know, residency programs and accreditation now, our lifeline is also determined on how many of our graduates pass the boards. So programs are really paying attention to applicants and their history with standardized tests. This is a problem in particular, I think, for some programs that might be willing to take on non-traditional students who have lots of to give and lots of life experience, but who may not have been so strong academically or test-wise. So, once again, turning a challenge into an opportunity, a fail on step one is a great chance to have a conversation about what you learned from that failure, how you study now better, how you have shifted your sort of strategies for medical knowledge and for sort of becoming an expert in a certain area, and how you can sort of relax me, the interviewer, who's sort of worried, right, about how much work you will need in terms of extra support as, you know, step three and boards come along in the journey ahead. So I wouldn't shy away from that conversation, but I would really pitch it in the light of, you know, what you have learned, your self-confidence and how it's grown, and how you're in a feeling like in a good place where academic challenges don't feel so daunting to you anymore.
Another question about contacting a program earlier versus later. And don't want to appear to be a nuisance. I would say earlier than later if you're going to contact them, because again, you don't want their interviewing slots to be filled. I just, like as it was mentioned before, wouldn't do it repeatedly. You know, once you've contacted them a few times, then you don't want to be calling every week if you haven't heard from them.
All right. Well, let me just again thank you so much, Dr. Vasquez, Dr. Strothers, for a most informative and helpful session. There was a lot of useful information shared here tonight. And the good news is also that this session is captured on our website, culturalmedicinetraining.org, if you would like to revisit it, or if any of you would like to pitch it to your friends. We are meeting again next month. Our session date is November 14th, and we will be talking about navigating racism and fairness issues in medical school and medical along the medical training. And we welcome you to participate in that. Also, we have a Yammer group. It's kind of a Twitter, but closed just to ourselves. That's also a place where you should feel really free to pitch questions or comments. Our faculty presenters are part of that as well. And we are happy to engage with you and support you in that. As a matter of fact, last month we talked about writing personal statements, and this week somebody pitched their personal statement just to get some feedback, and the presenters were happy to do that. We were happy to do that. So this grant and this project is really all about whatever support we can lend to all of you. So let me just say that our tradition is that we always end our sessions with a small dance party. So if you will all sort of stand up and come down to the floor, and I will explain to you how we dance. If you'll come over, you'll see this jukebox right here behind Pam. You just click on the jukebox, and a box will come up with a lot of numbers. Click on a number, and before you know it, you should be dancing.